Welcome to the CISO 500, a monthly cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Spark, providers of 100% data resiliency through its classified grade cybersecurity for commercial solutions and managed services. Visit Spark at sparkglobal.com. I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Ron Green, Executive Vice President and Chief Information Security Officer at MasterCard. According to Forbes, the company employed nearly 15,000 people and had sales of $15 billion in 2019. Prior to MasterCard, Ron held senior information security leadership positions with Fidelity National Information Services, Research in Motion, and Bank of America. Earlier in his career, Ron spent nearly 9 years as a special agent with the U.S. Secret Service. Ron, great to have you with us today.
Steve, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So, Ron, before we get started, I want to ask about your background. You filmed an interview with us several months ago, and I remember your law enforcement background. Our field, cybersecurity, has a lot of job openings and opportunities for people of all ages. Can you tell us what you did for the Secret Service and how you transitioned into our field?
Sure. Yeah, in the Secret Service, I was a special agent, just like, you know, what you see on TV with the little thing in your ear, standing behind the president, that kind of thing. But they, agents do more than just, you know, presidential or vice presidential protection. The Secret Service actually was created to protect the nation's financial infrastructure. So that's why they started within Treasury. So my job as an agent was to, you know, work on, in addition to protection, I did some of that. But we also worked on financial crimes. And as a part of working on financial crimes, anyone working in law enforcement today, while you're working on your criminal investigation, you come across technology. And the Secret Service is no different. In the course of working against counterfeit or credit card fraud or any number of things we were working on, we came across computers and then cell phones. And so somebody had to process and do stuff with it. Of the group of investigators I was with, I had a degree in engineering, the rest in criminal justice. And so they kindly gave me the opportunity to excel handling the technology. Headquarters found out. And digging into computer technology was part of my job. And that, you know, quickly connected to financial services. As banks were being defrauded, they needed people that understood security in technology. And so investigators that were working on it made a great sense for them to hire. And that's why, you know, a lot of guys like me are in the financial services sector and in other sectors, hence. So in law enforcement, you deal with technology, it becomes part of what you do, and it translates into cybersecurity jobs.
So Ron, one quick question before we jump into the heart of what we're here to discuss today. Young people, we publish a lot of content. We get a lot of questions from young people. We get parents who contact us. We publish some directories and information for people thinking about cyber. If a student is in college and they're studying and graduate with a degree in criminal justice, are they a potential candidate for our field, even if they don't have experience the way you did?
Yeah, it's anybody in law enforcement, anyone with a degree in anything can get into the cybersecurity field. Not all the roles are what you see as hackers or people with their faces pressed against the computer screen. There are a lot of functions within cyber that are not deep technical. You can, you know, intelligence gathering and analysis. That's not deep technical, but as you're working in that or risk or any of the other non-technical cyber fields, you get exposure to the more technical. And then, you know, that once you're in the cyber field, if you see a more technical track that you want to go down, you certainly can avail yourself to that. I can tell you stories about people that have started in non-technical parts of the security organization that have moved into the digital forensics. And I've actually had one of my admins, one of my assistants, she worked with the team so long, she got an opportunity to go look at the things that they do and learn it. And she actually became a forensic examiner doing, the things that I used to do as an agent. She can now do here at Master.
Right. Well, that's great to hear. I think a lot of it just comes down then to ambition and, believing that you can do it. Yeah. So Ron, we invited you on today to talk to you about the COVID-19 pandemic. I have to ask, in your opinion, do most CISOs plan for these types of worst case scenarios, catastrophic situations that can mean the loss of offices, or in this case, sending all of your employees home to work?
I'll tell you that, part of being in security is you have to think about the worst case. What we do is either meant to prevent the bad thing from happening or respond to the bad thing happening. And in, planning for all this, pandemic planning is a part of what any security organization has been thinking about. At MasterCard, we spent a lot of time thinking about and preparing for it, having various tests and exercises over the years that put us in a, really good place, if you can call it that, for, when this happened. And then, just all of our preparation gave us an opportunity to help out others. And an example of that is, when we, provided masks to some of the people that are out there on the front lines in the hospitals. We happen to have stored or bulked up on masks just in case, an event like this should come. And where we had surplus, we were able to share that with the hospital.
That's interesting. I did speak to another CISO yesterday, and that podcast will air next week. And I don't know that as many CISOs are out there actually planning for pandemics. That's a little bit different than some of the crises that they're used to planning for. It sounds like MasterCard and you are definitely a step ahead. Let me ask you this. Did the COVID-19 outbreak generate more communications than usual between the C-suite executives and CIOs and CISOs? And did sending employees home create more concern around the risk of cybercrime?
I'll tell you, it definitely created more communication than usual. I'm fortunate that, the lines of communication are really open and there's lots of dialogue that happens. But because of the event, a ton more interaction between, me and our CIO or president of technology with, the CEO and his leadership team, lots more conversation. I'll also tell you that there is a lot more conversation from that level to the employees in general, right? Where before you would have quarterly meetings to the whole company, you now do it every 2 weeks. And then the different leaders that report to the CEO, they have their meetings on those off weeks because everyone's so far apart. You have to work more to talk to them so that they feel close together. We had, when it came to, the potential for more cyber criminal activity with everyone working at home, the dynamic certainly changed. We've always had an environment where, we allowed people to work from home in a way that was safe. Instead of just doing it in onesies, twosies, dozens, or a couple hundred, now we're doing it with the whole company. So that dynamic has really amped up some of the things that we've had to do. Instead of protecting a central site, we still have to protect that central site, but now we have to protect more individual home environments. And in order to allow all of the work to be done from home, we've had to make some relaxations in what we do. And in order to compensate for relaxations, we've had to implement newer and more precise controls. So I'd say it's a different space, but it's not one that's not not unfamiliar for us to get our arms around. It's something that we've certainly, you know, been able to work our way through.
So, Ron, when COVID-19 is behind us, or at least to the extent that employees can return to their offices, what is the lesson learned here, if any, for large enterprise CISOs?
For those that didn't plan, I think they'll be, you know, doing a lot more planning around it. For those that did plan, I think what you have is you have just reassurance that you were thinking about things the right way. Sometimes when you're doing planning for the worst case scenarios, people can think that, you know, oh, this will never happen. This is that event that you guys are planning for these disaster scenarios, but you know, it's a little overkill. But then you have something like this take place, and then there's an agreement that, well, yes, I guess that stuff can happen. So, you know, more support, it's easier to get support for, you know, if you're an organization that has not really planned for it, or you've done some planning on it, but you didn't get the resources that you need, you'll be able to get more of that. I think that will change for you. I think for us, I think we launched really well, but there's always opportunities for improving anything. So, you know, we've learned different things to make things go smoother. Should we have to do it again? Hopefully we don't have to do it again, but you always have to be prepared for this kind of thing.
Well, I really appreciate the feedback and your observations, Ron. Before we go, I want to circle back to, you know, your background. We had a chief risk officer from a large bank publish an article in our magazine about why he became a CISSP. And I was surprised by how much interest that generated. And there was just, you know, we had CISOs contacting us, and we had, you know, just a lot of people, you know, asking questions about the topic. I want to ask about your certifications, which are very impressive. We don't have many CISOs who are CISSPs and ISSMs. Two very important credentials. You've also been through the FBI CISO Academy and the FBI Domestic Security Executive Academy. How important are these certifications insofar as how they help you personally do what you do? And why do so few CISOs have them?
All of these things take time. And you know, you got to invest time into going out and either studying up or, you know, taking the test or participating in those academies. So for some CISOs, they might be in a position where they don't have enough time, enough resources to back them up. It's a challenge getting, you know, training and exposure to things. I know we see it every day, not just for CISOs, but just to train your team members. And to that, I say, you always have to make time. There will never be a good time. You know, for me, I'm at a point in my career where, you know, having the credential, I'm not trying to get other jobs or anything like that. But if you're, you know, trying to get a chief information security officer job, or you're trying to get a security related job, if you have the credential, it's helpful. It just says you have a level of understanding for a framework that, you know, we all have an understanding around, which means, you know, I at least know that you know those things, and it's helpful. You don't have to have those. There's so many jobs that need to be filled that not having those is not going to stop you from being successful in the role. It just gives you an advantage to say, hey, I have these, I've got this thing behind me, and therefore I might have an edge. For some of it, it's just wanting to, you know, learn more about the field and investing that time so I can, you know, be a better security officer for my company. It also gets me tighter relationships with the different organizations that host the training or the other people that are a part of the field. Now, just knowing a lot yourself, that's good, but being able to connect with other security practitioners in other companies, in other service sectors, like there's the financial service sector, there's manufacturing, there's the technology, being able to cross those sectors to get feedback and information. And if bad things happen, you know people in those other organizations that can give you a hand. So there's a lot more than just getting that certification for you to, you know, do stand out to apply for a role, but it gives you exposure to other people and allows you to network and, you know, just better build out who you are as a security person.
Well, and I suppose it also gives you a much deeper understanding of what your people are doing for you.
Yes, it does.
Ron, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you've got a very busy schedule. We appreciate it. Our listeners appreciate it. And I hope we can do this again soon.
Yep. Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to join you at any time. Please remain safe. It's always good hearing your voice. And, you know, happy to join you anytime you need me in the future.
We'll be back next month with another episode of the CISO 500, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by Spark, providers of 100% data resiliency through its classified grade cybersecurity for commercial solutions and managed services. Visit Spark at sparkglobal.com. I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. You can listen to all of our podcast series at cybercrime.radio.